Everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and hopefully today we are going to finish Article 41. I don't know. There's a lot of memos at the back end of it, and I don't know if I have what it takes to get through all of those. But we should at least finish 41.4, 41.5, and a good chunk of the memos. And, well, we'll see. We'll see how far we get. All right, so let's get started. Section 41.4. Section 4, City Carrier Transportation Drive-Out Agreements. It is agreed by and between the United States Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers that the following terms and conditions represent the basic understanding of the parties as to the administration of transportation agreements, drive-out, of city carriers for the period of this agreement. The furnishing of a vehicle by a city carrier for transportation to and from the route shall be voluntary. No carrier may be coerced into furnishing a vehicle or carrying passengers or relays without the carrier's consent. A written authorization, Form 1311, shall be executed by the installation head in every instance, with a copy of said authorization to be retained by the installation head and the carrier. Carriers should not drive their cars to and from the route for their own personal convenience. 2. Reimbursement to a carrier who provides a vehicle shall be determined locally by written agreement between the carrier and installation head and shall not be less nor more than the sum of the amounts computed under each of the factors listed below as applicable to the individual case. 3. All carriers furnishing a vehicle for transporting themselves, passengers, and mail to and from the assigned routes shall be reimbursed on a mileage zone basis as follows. A. For transportation of carrier and carry-out swing from delivery unit to beginning of route when distance is 1/2 mile or more from the or from end of route if route begins less than but ends more than 1/2 mile from the delivery unit. Reimbursement rates, and there's a chart here. You can go and look at that chart if you want. It is on page 41-37 that describes how much the carrier gets reimbursed. And that chart is A. B. When carriers use their vehicles as transportation for distances more than 1/2 mile between segments of a route or routes, they will be reimbursed 60 cents for each such movement. C. 60 cents for each mail relay carried, up to a maximum of $3 daily. D. 60 cents per authorized ride for each carrier or supervisory passenger. And E. 30 cents for each article transported longer than the size required to be delivered by foot letter carriers, 2 pounds. Article 41.4.3.E, prior to the 1978 National Agreement, article was parcel. The change was made so that the provision would apply to all classes of mail. 41.4.3.F. F. Part-time flexibles providing auxiliary assistance on one or more routes shall be paid at mileage zone rates indicated above for the first route served, plus 60 cents for each additional authorized move of 1/2 mile or more. 4. Carrier agreements in effect which provide allowances more favorable than those provided by the schedule in subsection 3 above shall continue in force for the duration of this agreement unless terminated by either party upon 30 days written notice or reassignment of the carrier. See memo page 235. CCAs may not enter into city carrier transportation drive-out agreements as defined in Article 41.4 of the National Agreement. However, Memorandum of Understanding regarding use of privately owned vehicles applies to CCAs. In circumstances where the postmaster or station manager determines that use of a personal vehicle is necessary for business purposes, a CCA may voluntarily elect to use his or her vehicle. Such agreement must be made through PS Form 8048, Commercial Emergency Vehicle Hire, with the daily rate for vehicle use mutually agreed to by the postmaster or station manager and the employee. The postmaster or station manager must then forward the completed form to the servicing vehicle maintenance facility manager. 41.5, Section 5, the final section. National Joint City Delivery Committee. There will be established at the national level a Joint City Delivery Committee. The committee will be comprised of representatives of the employer and 5 union representatives appointed by the president of the NALC and will meet for the purpose of advising on problems affecting city delivery service and to present suggested changes and improvements in operating procedures. Such meetings will be held semi-annually at post office headquarters. Agenda items shall be exchanged 15 working days in advance of the scheduled meeting, and written minutes shall be kept of all such committee meetings. The City Delivery Committee shall receive notice of any proposed changes in any instructional booklet regarding the mail count and route inspection and adjustment system. Recommendations of the NALC representatives will be considered and may be adopted by mutual agreement of the committee, provided they are not in conflict with the national agreement. And now we get to the memos. So this first memo is a memo between the USPS and the NALC regarding router carrier craft. 1. Router is a grade 1 city letter carrier assignment. 2. Router consists of casing, routing, and sequencing of mail for a specific group of routes. Assignments may include specific street duties as reflected in the assignment posting. 3. Router assignments shall be formed and bid as full-time duty assignments. Part-time router work assignments may be utilized consistent with 4 below. 4. The number of full-time router assignments shall be determined consistent with Article 7, Section 3 of the National Agreement. 5. The notice inviting bids shall include a listing of routes for which router's duties will be performed by the posted assignment. 6. A router may be temporarily moved from his or her bid assignment only in, quote, unanticipated circumstances, end quote, pursuant to the provisions of Article 41, Section 1.C.4 of the National Agreement. 7. A Grade 1 replacement router may be utilized where practical to cover the non-scheduled days of other router assignments. Date, November 21st, 2001. And here is a memo between the USPS and the Joint Bargaining Committee regarding that. If for those of you that don't remember, that's the APWU and NALC bargaining together. Regarding training committee, the Postal Service reaffirms its commitment to provide employees with training consistent with organizational needs. Additionally, the Postal Service recognizes the desirability of affording employees opportunities for self-development and will make training programs available to meet such needs. The Postal Service will afford the unions, at the national level, the opportunity to discuss concerns about specific training opportunities or programs. A joint committee on training is hereby established at the national level, which will consist of representatives of both parties. The committee shall meet to discuss matters of mutual interest and benefit related to training programs and opportunities. The Assistant Postmaster General, Training and Development Department, shall be the employer's chief representative on such committee. The committee may consider and develop pilot programs, improve training methods and strategies, and other matters related to employee training and educational opportunities. Issues concerning local training and educational opportunities, including the use of postal facilities for non-compensable training in college-accredited courses, publicity of self-development training opportunities, and other training and educational matters of mutual interest and benefit, are appropriate subjects for resolution at local labor management committee meetings. Consistent with established regulations and operational needs, the Postal Service will give consideration to requests for leave without pay by employees for training and educational purposes. Their opportunities, I should say. The parties agree to consult at the national level to define which specific training courses and/or programs are job-related and those which are self-developmental, including the conditions in which a particular course or set of courses could be either. The parties further agree to initiate such discussions at the national level within 90 days of the effective date of this agreement and to jointly pursue agreed-upon strategies and initiatives, dated July 21st, 1987. And next we have a memo between the USPS and the American Postal Workers Union. I wonder why that's in here. Well, I'm going to read it. Regarding use of privately owned vehicles, the parties agree that the following represents the policy of the U.S. Postal Service and the American Postal Workers Union concerning the furnishing of privately owned vehicles, POV, by employees of the crafts represented by the APWU. No craft employee represented by the APWU may be coerced into furnishing a vehicle or carrying passengers without the employee's consent. The use of a personal vehicle is the decision of the employee, and it is not the intent of the parties to discourage such use of personal vehicles when transportation is needed from one postal facility to another or in the completion of the employee's assignment. When an employee begins his or her workday at one postal unit and is provided transportation to another unit to complete his or her tour of duty, that employee will be provided with transportation back to the unit where his or her tour began if transportation is needed. If the employee ends tour at the new location If the employee ends tour at the new location, the return trip will not be on the clock, but transportation will be provided promptly by management upon request. Date July 21st, 1987, and somehow the preceding memorandum applies to city carrier assistant employees. All right, the next memo is, it is a settlement agreement between the USPS and the NALC regarding segmentation. The United States Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, in joint discussion and consultation, have agreed on a set of principles governing the implementation of the segmentation concept as provided in the M39 Handbook, see attachment. These principles will ensure the efficiencies and effective implementation of the segmentation concept and ensure the fair and appropriate utilization of letter carriers in the performance of the work involved in segmentation. Statement of Principles. Segmentation of mail can efficiently be processed on automated or mechanized equipment. Let me read that again. Statement of Principles. Segmentation of mail can efficiently be processed on automated or mechanized equipment. Such processing will be done by the craft designated to operate that equipment. A manual, tertiary, or delivery preparation operation is the manual sortation or preparation of mail that occurs after an incoming secondary operation and does not require memorization of distribution scheme items. A manual, tertiary, or delivery operation will be done by city delivery letter carriers, provided the mail is for city delivery routes or post office box sections served by these routes, and provided there is space available at the delivery unit. If space is not available and sortation is done at a general mail facility, a processing center, or any other postal installation or facility within the installation, letter carriers will perform the manual tertiary sortation at such facilities. An incoming secondary operation normally requires memorization of distribution scheme items and is one which results in mail being sorted to carrier routes, firms, box section, Nixies, postage dues, and other separations necessary for the efficient processing of mail. Routers can be used to perform the manual tertiary sortation of mail segmentation whenever that is operationally feasible. Tertiary sortation duties may also be combined with other forms of letter carrier work to create full-time assignments. Even though no arbitrary limitation is placed on the number of pieces in a segmentation, a limitation will, in effect, be imposed by whatever number of pieces is operationally effective and efficient for each operation in an installation. Standard manual distribution cases that are used in delivery units should be fully utilized for sorting mail to carrier routes, box sections, postage dues, etc. Segmentations should contain sufficient volumes that can be sorted and pulled down efficiently. For example, a single delivery point or ZIP plus 4 segment, block face, apartment building, etc., that averages 2 or 3 pieces a day should not normally take up space on the incoming manual secondary case. Exceptions can be holdouts such as Nixies, postage dues, etc., that require special treatment regardless of volume. Segmentations are not necessarily static. Therefore, manual secondary cases should be reviewed periodically to ensure that all cells are properly utilized in the most effective and efficient manner possible, consistent with operational or service needs. Each installation will determine the type of equipment to be used in tertiary sortation. Performance on that equipment will be done in accordance with the principle of a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, which will normally be reflected in the general performance expectations for that equipment. The parties understand that the tertiary sortation referenced here is the result of the implementation of the segmentation concept, which is presently described in the changes to the M39 handbook as presented to the NALC on August 15, 1985. Any tertiary sortation established prior to June 16, 1983 will remain in effect unless changed by the installation. Changes made after June 16, 1983, but prior to the implementation of this understanding, which are in conflict with this document, will be changed to conform. The employee involvement process will be utilized to develop recommendations for use by the installations affected by this agreement. The National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, and the United States Postal Service acknowledge that this settlement agreement is not an admission of fault or liability on the part of either party to this agreement. The United States Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, also acknowledge that this agreement sets forth all the terms for settling pending grievance, and there's a grievance here, a grievance number. The parties agree to meet as soon as practicable to resolve all other outstanding grievances involving segmentation in a manner consistent with this agreement. The United States Postal Service and the NALC agree that the terms of the settlement contained in this document may not be added to or subtracted from in any way. This settlement agreement is without prejudice to the positions of either party with respect to the interpretation or application of the national agreement in any future proceeding between the parties. The effective date of this agreement is March 9th, 1987. I'm going to interrupt myself here to say I do not know what tertiary sortation is. I wonder if like the parcel sorting machines that we have would be considered tertiary sortation, but I don't know. If you know, maybe look it up in the M39. All right. Anyway. Oh, maybe I should just keep reading because next it says Management of Delivery Services, Handbook M39, Transmittal Letter 11, and it's 116.8, Segmentation of Mail. Point 81, Definition. Major characteristics of the ZIP plus 4 data file is the segment, or the smallest unit to which distribution can be made. Segmentation is the sortation or preparation of mail into clusters or groupings for the purpose of achieving greater processing and or carrier sortation efficiency. Using the ZIP plus 4 segment concept, segmentations may be prepared by customers or contract personnel prior to entry or in postal operations prior to dispatch or receipt by the carrier. Examples of segmentations include, but are not limited to, mail group by unique ZIP plus 4, grouped by unique ZIP plus 4 code, ZIP plus 4 block face, multi-tenant buildings, box sections, including NDCBUs, or individual addresses. Dated March 9th, 1987. Okay, so segmentation is something that predates DPS, where mail was sorted down to the ZIP plus 4 level. All right, and now we know. And I can't imagine how that is possibly still relevant, but there it is in the contract. Next, Memorandum for Postmasters, City Delivery Offices, Local Presidents, National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO. Subject, Joint Agreements. The NALC and USPS recognize that our continued existence as a viable organization is heavily dependent upon our ability to meet our customers' needs while empowering employees to levels not previously envisioned. As many of you are aware, we have strived at the national level to obtain an agreement on the implementation of automation of letter mail on carrier routes. We agreed then, and we agree now, on three basic principles. Once again, I have to interrupt myself because the corporate language in some of this stuff, that we're going to empower employees to levels not previously envisioned. Boy, do you feel empowered? Man, I could just feel the power coursing through me. All right, if I keep doing this, I'm never going to finish. So here are the basic principles upon which we agreed then and we agree now. Provide the best service to postal customers, mailers, and recipients. Minimize impact on letter carrier craft employees. Create an opportunity for increased efficiency. Our mutual hope is that the following agreements will provide a basis for trust and cooperativeness, and that they will form a basis on which to satisfy our customers' needs. While each agreement may not accomplish all that each party may desire, collectively they will form the basis for a positive working relationship of mutual trust and respect, and the foundation for continued empowerment of all employees. Case configuration / letter-sized mail. This agreement provides for a standard definition of letter-sized mail and provides the guidelines for conducting route inspections when letter mail is cased into 4 and 5 shelf case configurations that have been established as a result of a joint agreement. Transitional employee issue resolutions provides information on the transitional employee and highlights areas of apparent disparity of interpretation where mutual understanding has now been reached. Further, this agreement provides that a joint booklet on the transitional employee will follow. X-Route Alternative. An optional alternative joint process is provided for preparing installations for future automated letter mail environment. This agreement has many unique features and should be reviewed in detail before deciding its applicability. Delivery Point Barcoding Work Methods. This agreement recognizes the substantial contributions that city letter carriers can make in the development of new work methods. It provides a 5-step process that ensures a review of alternative methods and continued upgrading of work methods as the process evolves. route adjustments, the future. The parties have fashioned an agreement that provides clear guidance on procedures to be followed when preparing route adjustments for letter mail automation in delivery units not selecting the X-Route alternative. Hempstead Resolution, the past. We are remanding all pending grievances on route adjustments to the local parties for resolution. The parties will be guided by the principles of the above-cited agreements and must take into consideration the following factors. Was there a current event? That is, were the routes out of adjustment? How far in advance was the future event that was used to adjust the route? The parties have made no determination as to the appropriate time period. What was the projected timing of the upcoming event? What was the basis for determining the effect of the future event? How certain is that future event? As you review each case, you will find that either management pre-planned properly and the current structure is within the purview of this agreement, therefore the current structure is valid, or management pre-planned inappropriately or timeframes have changed, negating the validity of the adjustment. It is your obligation to make these joint determinations and to decide what remedy to apply and how to fix the problem if one is discovered. The party should consider the impact of any decision on our employees who serve our customers and the impact on the customers which they serve. If the parties cannot resolve these cases, they may be appealed to regional arbitration. Date September 17th, 1992. And here is a memo between the USPS and the NALC. Resolution of issues left open by Mittenthal Award of July 10th, 1992. Current events and adjustments. A current event is defined as a route or routes which are shown to be out of adjustment by a recent route inspection and evaluation. All current adjustments to existing routes will place the route on as near an 8-hour daily basis as possible in accordance with Handbook M39. Adjustments near-term automation. When routes require a current adjustment and delivery point sequencing will commence within 6 months, management will adjust the routes using non-territorial, non-scheme change adjustments by the use of router assistance, segmentation, or permanent handoffs as outlined in the M39 Handbook, Section 243.21b. The 6-month period runs from the first day after the week of route inspection. Future events and adjustments. Automation. Management may utilize the results of a recent route inspection and evaluation to estimate and plan route adjustments, including realignment of assignments, that will be required by a future event which is to take place within 18 months. Management must provide documentation to the local union to support the deployment if they intend to plan the adjustments for a future event. The planned adjustments for future events will not be implemented until automation is online and operative. Management may implement the planned adjustments if the actual percentage of DPS mail received at the unit is within plus or minus 5 percentage points of the targeted, in Step 1, level. Should the actual percentage of DPS mail be outside these limits, then management must recalculate the estimated impact on carrier routes based on the actual percentage of DPS mail being received at the unit. The results of the recent route inspection and evaluation will be used to determine a new impact and construct a new plan of management, or management may wait for the plan levels to be received. The 18-month period runs from the first day after the week of route inspection. For purposes of this agreement, a future event is defined as mail being received at a delivery unit in DPS order. Within 60 days of implementing the planned adjustments for future automated events, the parties will revisit those adjustments to ensure that the routes are as near to 8 hours daily as possible. Both the planned adjustments and subsequent minor adjustments that may be necessary to ensure compliance will be based on the most recent route inspection data for that route. However, if the future event occurs after the 18-month time limit expires, a new mail count, route inspection, and evaluation must occur unless the local parties agree otherwise. Methodology. So there's a big section here that describes how these route adjustments are going to be implemented once DPS kicks in, and I really don't think it's worth going over, so I'm going to skip past it. And then the last thing is pending grievances. And they'll deal with that. All those get remanded. So that was dated September 17th, 1992, and I have no idea how that could possibly be relevant to us today. So if you want to see that chart for whatever crazy reason you have, or that way that they did the adjustments, it's on page 41-44. We're going to move on to another memo that is about this same change. Memorandum of Understanding between the USPS and the NALC regarding X route alternatives. The parties have reached an agreement on an alternative route adjustment strategy, X route. The decision to use the X route concept is made on an installation-wide basis, even though inspections and planning for individual units/zones may not occur at the same time. In units with more than one delivery unit or zone, the planning process is repeated as each delivery unit/zone is inspected, assignments are evaluated, and adjustments are planned. X-route process. The X-route process is an alternative approach to route adjustment in preparation for automation. All right, again, this is the same thing. It's about what we're going to do when DPS finally comes, and this is so far behind us. So I am going to skip. All right, moving on. Here we have another memo between the USPS and the NALC. This one does not have what it's regarding. It just gets right into it. So here we go. The U.S. Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, recognize the importance of the work methods that will be used in a delivery point sequence environment. Dude. Okay, I'm skipping this one too. If for some reason you have a real boner for learning about how DPS was implemented, it looks like hopefully it wraps up on page 41-48. Okay, so maybe, well, this memo is at least short. All right, the next one is, again, just another memo between the USPS and the NALC, and it is not titled. For the purpose of conducting mail counts and route inspections on traditional casing equipment, letter size is defined as mail that can be cased into the letter separations of a standard six-shelf case without folding or bending, approximately 6 inches in height. Letter size does not include newspapers, rolls, small parcels, flats, magazines, or catalogs under 2 pounds, even though these items may be cased into the letter separations of a standard case without folding or bending. When mail counts and route inspections are conducted in a unit where letter mail is cased into 4- and 5-shelf case configurations that have been established as a result of any joint agreement, the existing definition of letter size mail will not change. The 18 and 8 standards remain applicable. Under these conditions, local management will meet with the local union prior to the dry run training to determine an efficient means to verify mail of questionable size during the week of count and inspection, e.g. a measuring strip on each case or use of a template as a reference point. The acceptance by the parties of this approach to letter size definition and case configuration is without prejudice to the parties' rights under Article 34 of the National Agreement and shall not be cited by either party in the grievance or arbitration procedure or any other forum which does not pertain to the implementation of this agreement. So once again, that's a complete waste of time because I was thinking like, oh, we have a good definition for what's a letter and what's a flat. And no, it only applies to this one specific case. Good times. All right. Next, memo between the... No, why is this stuff still in the contract? In what way is this possibly relevant? All right. It's above my pay grade to figure that out. Memo between the USPS and the NALC regarding transitional employees/part-time flexible conversions. 1. All part-time flexibles currently on the rolls will be offered an opportunity to convert to full-time regular status by November 20th, 1994. The conversion opportunity may be contingent on the PTF's agreement to move to an available full-time assignment during this period. However, it is the intent of the parties that any such requirement to change offices will not be utilized by management as a device to discourage conversions, and that inconvenience and disruption to PTFs will be minimized. PTFs will be converted to available full-time assignments in their current installation. If insufficient full-time assignments are available to accommodate all PTFs in an installation, the remaining PTFs will be offered the opportunity to transfer to available full-time assignments within the commuting area, and the local union will be provided a list of all such assignments. The local union representative will be responsible for ascertaining the preferences by use of seniority of the PTFs who decide to accept a conversion opportunity in another installation and for communicating that preference to management. If PTFs from different installations seek the same assignment in another installation, craft seniority will determine which PTF gets that conversion opportunity. If the foregoing process does not result in the offer of a conversion to all PTFs in an installation, the Postal Service will identify other conversion opportunities, including assignments outside the commuting area, during the conversion period. Any decision by a PTF to transfer to another office under this agreement will be considered voluntary. 2. In lieu of the DSSA analysis provided in the January 16, 1992 NALC Transitional Employee Arbitration Award, the parties will use the impact formula contained in the September 21, 1992 Hempstead Memorandum of Understanding to determine the number of TE hours allowed in a delivery unit due to automation impact. All such TEs will be separated in a delivery unit when delivery point sequencing is online and operational. 3. The parties further agree that in offices, automation impacted or non-impacted, where the number of PTF conversions exceeds the number of TEs allowed under the above impact formula, additional TEs may be hired to replace such PTF attrition. All such TEs will be separated from the rolls by November 20, 1994. 4. All pending national grievances seeking conversions of PTFs will be resolved by offering the affected PTFs the opportunity to convert to full-time regular assignments on a priority basis pursuant to this agreement. This agreement is without prejudice to the positions of either party with respect to any interpretive issue. 5. The parties at the local level will meet to review the current TE complement and pending TE or PTF grievances as follows. The meeting will occur after the joint training and during the local meeting on Hempstead issues. The parties will attempt to resolve any pending grievances, including appropriate remedies for violations, if any. The Postal Service's liability, if any, will be limited to any TE hours in excess of that allowed by paragraphs 2 and 3 above, which occurred prior to the date of this agreement. If TE hours in a delivery unit exceed that allowed by paragraphs 2 and 3 above, management must, no later than 3/1/93, either 1. Relocate TEs to another delivery unit to stay within the allowable limits, or 2. Reduce work hours per TE so as to stay within the allowable limits, or 3. Remove excess TEs from the rolls. 6. The parties herein express the desirability of affording future career employment opportunities to TEs. Consistent with that view, the parties agree to jointly explore the feasibility of such career opportunities consistent with applicable law. And this is in the contract now. Why? I don't know. But at least now I know why they were called transitional employees. It's when we were making the transition to DPS. I guess that's something. All right. Next memo is regarding DPS work methods. Well, we're still working with DPS, so I guess I'll read this one. This Memorandum of Understanding represents the parties' final agreement regarding the October 8, 1998 Joint Work Method Study to determine the more efficient work method for city delivery routes in delivery units where DPS has been or will be implemented. This MOU is based on the results of a joint study conducted by the parties pursuant to Chapter 5 of Building Our Future by Working Together to determine the relative efficiency of the composite bundle and vertical flat casing work methods in a DPS environment. Further, any interim or local agreements for handling the fourth bundle on park and loop and foot routes will continue until conversion to the DPS vertical flat casing work method. In accordance with paragraph 3 of the October 8, 1998 Joint Work Method Study Agreement, the following are the parties' joint instructions to the field. 1. There continue to be two approved DPS work methods, the composite bundle work method and the vertical flat casing work method. Any other work methods must be approved by Postal Service headquarters prior to testing or implementation. 2. The parties have analyzed the results of the joint study and have determined that the vertical flat casing work method is the more efficient work method at all sampled percentage levels of DPS. Management may convert those routes that have vertical flat cases and are currently using the composite bundle work method to the vertical flat casing DPS work method. 3. On curbline routes and business routes where DPS is planned but not implemented, management will determine the most efficient DPS work method. All other routes not yet converted to DPS which have vertical flat cases will use the vertical flat casing DPS work method. 4. On those routes where DPS is not currently planned, but where DPS is implemented in the future, management will determine the DPS work method. 5. City letter carriers on a park and loop or foot route will not be required to carry more than 3 bundles. Hey, there's something useful. Date, March 21, 2000. And here we have another memo. This one has no regarding. It just starts right up. It is hereby agreed by the U.S. Postal Service and the NALC that the following represents the party's agreement with regard to implementation of the upgrade issue emanating from the September 19, 1999 Fleischli Award. Our agreement regarding case configuration when using the vertical flat casing work method and additional provisions relative to the 1998 National Agreement. 1. Effective November 18, 2000, all city letter carriers grade 5 will be upgraded, and the pay differential of grade 6 carrier technicians shall be maintained in accordance with the procedure set forth in the attached Memorandum of Understanding. 2. The provisions of Article 35, Section 2, concerning the National Joint EAP Committee will be renewed for the remainder of the term of the 1998 National Agreement. 3. The Memorandum of Understanding regarding leave sharing found on page 161 of the 1994 National Agreement will be renewed for the remainder of the term of the 1998 National Agreement. 4. The Memorandum of Understanding regarding sick leave for dependent care found on page 162 of the 1994 National Agreement will be renewed for the remainder of the term of the 1998 National Agreement. 5. The 30-day period of local implementation specified in Article 30 and the Memorandum of Understanding regarding local implementation will commence on October 2, 2000. 6. When management elects to reassess the case configuration of a route currently using the DPS vertical flat casing work method or changes the DPS work method on a route from the composite bundle work method to the vertical flat casing work method, management will determine for each route whether 4, 5, or 6 shelves will be used. Date, March 21st, 2000. And here we have a pre-arbitration settlement with a citation number. The issue in these grievances is whether or not the piece count recording system, PCRS, post office street time, post, or the delivery operation information system, DOIS, violate the national agreement. After reviewing this matter, we mutually agreed to settle these grievances as follows. Daily piece counts, PCRS, recorded in accordance with the above referenced systems, POST or DOIS, will not constitute the sole basis for discipline. However, daily counts recorded in accordance with these procedures may be used by the parties in conjunction with other management records and procedures to support or refute any performance-related discipline. This does not change the principle that, pursuant to Section 242.332 of the M39, quote, no carrier shall be disciplined for failure to meet standards, except in cases of unsatisfactory effort, which must be based on documented, unacceptable conduct that led to the carrier's failure to meet office standards. End quote. Furthermore, the pre-arbitration settlement, blah, 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 provides that, quote, there is no set pace at which a carrier must walk and no street standard for walking. End quote. This settlement is made without prejudice to the party's other rights under Article 9. This settlement is made without prejudice to the party's rights under Article 19 or Article 34 of the National Agreement. It is additionally understood that the current city letter carrier route adjustment process is outlined in Subchapter 141 and Chapter 2 of the M39 Handbook. All those functionalities in DOIS which relate to the route inspection and adjustment process must be in compliance with these two parts of the M39 as long as they are in effect. It is understood that no function performed by POST or DOIS now or in the future may violate the national agreement. Date, July 30th, 2001. All right, and on to the next step 4 settlement. There's a citation here for what it is, but this one is about managed service points, and we don't have those anymore. Those are no longer, we don't have to scan those barcodes out on the street anymore, so I'm going to go ahead and skip that one. The next memo is about FSS implementation, which, as I understand it, FSS has now been discontinued, and so that is irrelevant, so I'm going to skip that one too. If I'm wrong and you're really want to read about FSS, it's on page 41-53, and there's another one about FSS work methods on 41-44, and here's another one, FSS settlement. This one's really short. Let me read it just so that you get a sense of what we're missing here. Recently, our representatives met in discussion of the above-referenced grievance. The issue in this grievance concerns the method of determining FSS impact and the associated employment of transitional employees. As a result of our discussions, it is agreed that the above-referenced grievance is withdrawn and that this agreement resolves and closes all outstanding disputes at all levels of the grievance arbitration procedure concerning FSS impact and the associated employment of transitional employees. Date July 30th, 2007. And the terms of the settlement became effective September 11th, 2007, with the ratification of the 2006 to 2011 National Agreement. Yeah, that's completely irrelevant. All right, next is another FSS settlement, which I get to skip. And here we go, the next one. Carrier Optimal Routing Core Settlement. And there's a citation number. After reviewing this matter, the parties agree to the following. The Carrier Optimal Routing Core process is a management tool to assist with the adjustment of letter carrier routes pursuant to Chapter 2 of Handbook M39. No components of the core program or application of the core process will be inconsistent with the route inspection, evaluation, or adjustment process found in Chapter 2 of the M39 Handbook. Should the Postal Service develop CORE for use in the minor route adjustment process, related components of the CORE program or application of the CORE process will be consistent with the specific minor route adjustment process formula in Section 141.19 of Handbook M39. Local parties have established, by mutual agreement, an alternate route adjustment method may also use applications of CORE consistent with their alternate route adjustment process. To facilitate the practical application of this understanding, when transferring territory, the back of the PS Form 1840 will indicate, by sector segment, any change in street credit from the actual street time used in sector segment on PS Form 3999, including all relay, travel, allied time, etc. Any such adjustment to the carrier's actual street time must be documented and explained by appropriate comments on the reverse of PS Form 1840. Additionally, any time adjustment to the base street time, which must be selected pursuant to M39 section 242.321, will be documented and explained under the comments section on the reverse of PS Form 1840. Travel to, travel from, and travel within times must be validated, documented, and discussed during carrier consultation. The actual time should be taken from the inspection PS Form 3999, unless a new pattern is created during the route adjustment process. If a new travel pattern has been created, the new times must be validated. Notwithstanding any disputes regarding documentation and or justification for time adjustments made, the intent of the previous paragraph is for the letter carrier to be made aware of any proposed time adjustments to the carrier's base street time and or to the street time of the territory being transferred. Time adjustments for territory being transferred will be by sector segment, including all relay, allied, parcels, accountables, etc. Any time adjustments to a carrier's base street time must comply with the M39, section 242.345 through 242.347. Any grievance held pending a decision on this case will be resolved consistent with the principles of this agreement, dated July 30th, 2007. Next, we have S999 mail settlement, and there's a citation number here. The issue in this case is whether S999 mail, hold mail, caller mail, change of address mail, non-delivery day mail, processed on delivery point sequence automation equipment must receive piece credit on Section 1 of PS Form 1838C or actual time recorded on Line 21 of 1838C during route count and inspection. The parties discussed how to record S999 mail, multipoint mail, 9-digit mail that is not finalized in DPS order, and mail that is brought back from the street in the afternoon during a count and inspection. The parties agree that if this mail is cased in, the carrier case, it will be recorded on PS Form 1838C Sections 1 or 2 as applicable. Any of this mail that is not cased in the carrier case will be handled and recorded on Line 21. Date July 30th, 2007. And then the next one is the third bundle settlement, which we are going to hold off until next time. So there's still, 10 more pages of memorandums that we have to get through. So we're going to hold that for next time, and then I'll probably finish out, that's a decision for next time. All right, so thanks for listening, and I'll catch you then.